You are listening to a sermon from MCA Church. To learn more about our community, head online to mcachurch.ca. Thanks.
Well, good morning, MCA Church. It is a privilege to be with you this morning. As Marcus said, my name is James. Marcus, I miss us hanging out on the bench, watching our kids play basketball, our weekly hangout time, but it's nice to be here with you guys today. As Marcus said, I am the director of our campus ministry up at UBCO. Technically, I'm a missionary sent from the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada. We have a province-wide team of 21 missionaries reaching 8 campuses in the province of BC. And each one of our ministries in the province have established a Christian community on campus. Here's a photo of our campus ministry, what it used to look like. We have that next photo. And so that's what it looks like, on-campus presence. But as you know, more recently, we've all had to figure this out, and we've become an online campus ministry. If you're not familiar too much with UBCO, I'll share a few details. UBCO is a community that has grown over to 10,000 students now, of which 76% are students who are not from the Okanagan. Almost 2,000 are international students from representing over 109 countries. So we're truly becoming an international school. And over 3,200 students call the campus home. Half of those living in dorms, half of those living in the condos adjacent to it. And so that's why I believe it is so important for us to reach the campus. So how are we doing that at UCM? We do it through a threefold strategy. We try to meet weekly right on campus for worship. We mentor and disciple students in small groups and Bible studies. And then we equip them to reach out to their peers, their classmates, to serve the campus. So that's a bit about me and our ministry, and I want to share a bit more this morning. But this morning, I want to talk to you about one of the most important aspects of God's character, his sentness. And the passage that I want to speak out of comes from John's Gospel, John chapter 20, verse 21. This passage records Jesus' first words post-resurrection. As we're in the season of Eastertide right now, many of us perhaps have lost loved ones, and when they pass, likely we have held on to and remembered their last words, right? We probably cherish them. But now imagine if someone you knew and loved not only passed away, but then came back from death. Wouldn't you remember, wouldn't you pay attention to the first thing they said to you? Wouldn't you memorize it? Wouldn't you share it with everyone you knew? And if it had an instruction, wouldn't you do it? John remembers those words with crystal clarity. Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." Jesus begins first with a word of shalom, a word of peace. He extends peace. He says, "Don't worry, don't fear. I am with you." And we really need to hang on to those kind of messages and that kind of word from Jesus in the days we are in. But he doesn't waste time either. He immediately tells them what he wants them to know, what he wants them to do. He tells them why he's back. He tells them what this was all for. He said, "You learned from me what the Father looks like. You've seen the kingdom break in through me. You've been taught what kingdom people are meant to be like. As the Father has sent me, now I am sending you. Go and share this good news with others." As I said, as Marcus said, I'm a missionary, and I've been doing this for 17 years now. I know, it's crazy. I started when I was 12. Just kidding. Do you want to know what truly motivates me, what motivates me to continue doing this year after year? Often people ask me, "Well, are you going to get a job in a church or something like this?" No. Do you want to know what truly motivates me to continue being a missionary? It isn't just because during my university years, I was impacted by a campus ministry. And it isn't just because I believe that if you reach the campus, you reach the world. And it isn't just because the church is hemorrhaging young adults and we need to go to them. What really motivates me to be sent to the campus is because the more time I spend with Jesus, the more time I spend learning what the Father looks like, the more that I've come to know his essential character and nature is that God is a sent and sending God. Yes, God is love, and God is truth, and God is light, but did you know that God is mission? Mission isn't just a word we use to describe some of the activities of the church. We can't just add on more mission. We don't need to go missional. Mission, sentness, that extended, you know, external outward orientation actually describes the very identity and character of God. God doesn't love mission. God doesn't do mission. God doesn't have a heart for mission. God doesn't prefer mission. God doesn't wish you would do more mission. God is mission. All the way through the scriptures, God has revealed himself as the sent and sending God. And you don't have to wait to get to the Gospels or the book of Acts to see it. God has been describing himself as the sent and sending God from the very beginning, from the first line in the Bible. Look, how does God create the universe? How does God create order out of chaos? How does he create plants and animals and humankind? He sends out his word, his emissary, his missionary. And God said, and light is separated from darkness. And God said, and land is separated from the waters. And God said, and the birds and the air and the animals are created. God sends out his word, and his word goes forth and creates humankind. Creation itself is an act of mission. And who is his agent? His word. But note how God indicates his unique relationship with humankind. He sends his spirit. In Hebrew, it's ruach, his breath. Humankind is made in the image of God, and we have his spirit, his wind, his breath sent into our lungs. So if God is mission, then we live and function best when we live into his image. So even after humankind sins in the garden, after they grasp at autonomy, they're expelled out of the garden, and what does God do? He sends himself out after them. He follows them. And what about the whole history of Israel? If it isn't the sent and sending God extending himself beyond himself into the life of Israel, he sends himself into the giving of the law. He sends himself, his presence, his Shekinah glory, into the Ark of the Covenant and later into the temple. He sends himself through the work of the judges. He sends himself through the work of the prophets. The entire Old Testament is telling us that our God cannot help himself, but send himself through the lives of creation and humankind. But of course, we see it best in the incarnation. John's gospel in particular is littered with the references of sentness. 55 times in the gospel, the word sent is used. Mostly the word is used of Jesus as a description of God. He usually, the phrase, the one who sent me, repeats over and over. We have a slide here that several examples. After he talks with the Samaritan woman at the well, the disciples are concerned about whether or not he has eaten. And Jesus says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. Jesus is fueled by his sentness. In defense of Jewish leaders questioning his authority, Jesus says, by myself I can do nothing. I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So his motives are driven by his sentness. In chapter 6, he says, for I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but the will of him who sent me. Even his will is conformed to the sentness of God. Mostly Jesus talks about sentness as a description of God, but nearing his final hour, as he heard the prayer, as he prays this last prayer to the Father, Jesus prays, "As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world." Jesus begins calling his disciples to be defined by sentness as well. So much so that his first words post-resurrection, having conquered death, are, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." God is a sent and sending God. And we don't really understand the character and nature of God if we don't understand his sentness. You know, I often pray and I often wonder and I often, you know, dream, what would it look like if every church in the Okanagan were full of maturing disciples who daily lived sent lives? Now, once we begin to allow sentness to define who we are meant to be, I think the natural follow-up question ends up being, well, to whom? To whom are we sent? And I think that's the critical question that disciples of Jesus need to ask daily. When I first arrived in Kelowna here 11 years ago and started working up on campus, I got a parking spot in H lot because it's the cheapest lot on campus. But it also happens to be the furthest from the center of campus. So I would use that walking time to pray. And as I would walk up to campus, it gave me time to pray. You know, who do you have for me today, God? To whom are you sending me today, God? And I think we need to pray that prayer regularly on a personal level, but also on a corporate level. I mean, MCA Church, I think it's a good thing for you to be praying that as a body. To whom are you sending us? I remember the first time we asked this question at kind of our early vision meetings with our student leadership teams. And our students, you know, that's funny, that they're kind of hesitant to pinpoint it. They didn't want to narrow the scope. They kind of said, well, aren't we here to reach the whole campus? But as the saying goes, if you try to reach everybody, you end up reaching nobody. I grew up in Manitoba, and in our family home, we had a huge garden in our backyard. It took up like half our yard. And as kids, if my sister and I were fighting, my mom would always, you know, punish us with time served weeding the garden. You know, that's 10 minutes. Do you want 20 more minutes in the garden? Then at first, I would just kind of weed randomly, you know, kill the time. Just sort of thought it was about killing time. But then my mom would start checking in on us. And she'd say, well, I can't see where you made a difference. Next time you go to the garden, pick a particular area and make a noticeable difference. That's the same advice we give to our students when they're launching their small groups or if they're doing outreach or if they're serving the campus. Pick an area, make a noticeable difference. Over the years, we found if our small groups launch with a defined people group or place in whom they are sent, they're more successful at actually including new people into their groups. In the past, we've had small groups who focus on dorm students, particular dorms, first year, you know, faculties, international students. Corporately, as a ministry, all of our students know that our number one focus each year is to reach first year students. We believe first-year students are the most vulnerable. We believe they're the most in need of belonging. As I said, 76% of university students are coming from not from the Okanagan. And we believe even if they've grown up in a Christian home, they're coming here, and we need to provide healthy and supportive Christian community for them. And we do this because we've observed that, like, typically, if a first-year student isn't reached within the first 3 weeks of school, it's very unlikely they'll connect with a Christian ministry or a church throughout their whole first year in Kelowna. As a campus pastor, I have so many stories of students, second-year students, kind of finally connecting and saying, yeah, last year I was just a bit of a wash. You know, patterns become established, school becomes intense, and what happens is their faith moves to the back burner, becomes compartmentalized, it gets left behind as their parents' faith. And so for us, we have a very clear answer to that question. We're trying to prioritize reaching those 2,500 new students. We're trying to reach those who live near campus. So MCA Church, to whom are you sent? Asking the question to whom we are sent is a question that I think actually we need to keep asking, you know, time after time, year after year. But once you sense to whom you are sent, being sent to, the next question becomes, well, how? Like, what do I do? And I think that question is best answered by practicing what I call faithful presence. Sentness isn't about implementing a new program. It isn't a new formula. You don't want to try to borrow some other, you know, successful ministry model. I'm not here today to sell you on the things that we do and, oh, you should go ahead and do them too. No. Sentness is about practicing faithful presence in the lives of those to whom God has sent you. Over 10 years ago now, when I first started ministering up at UBCO, the group, when I arrived, the group had a practice of meeting together weekly for worship. That was kind of the main thing. That was everything kind of revolved around that. Eventually, they had some Bible studies get going too. But I remember in that first year, a student came up to us at a welcome table and said, "Hey, what do you guys do?" And I said, "Oh, well, we have this weekly gathering you can come to, or you can get into one of our groups." And the student was like, no, but what do you do? Like, how are you serving the campus? How are you involved? What's going on, you know? And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, oh, I don't really have a good answer for that. Another question at that time that was nagging on my heart, I think I had heard it at a conference or something. It's now become a kind of a quotable, tweetable, but it's this: if your church disappeared, would your community notice? And I remember thinking at that time about this question: if our ministry wasn't present on campus, would the campus care? If we didn't have our weekly worship gathering, would they care? They'd probably be happy, to be honest. Less, more room bookings, you know? And it's funny because this is the question we are facing today in this pandemic, aren't we? With the doors of our in-person gatherings closed, are the people of Kelowna no longer experiencing the ministry of the church? MCA, you need to ask, is your neighborhood, are they missing you since your Sunday services have gone online? Or are they experiencing the sentness of the body of MCA through faithful presence in the lives of their neighbors? I have to admit, our journey of faithful presence on campus hasn't been a linear one. It's been kind of a windy road of kind of figuring out and finding needs and serving in them. I remember at first we went and talked to the administration. We said, "Hey, what could we help with?" And they said, "Well, we have this trail maintenance project. You guys could roll up your sleeves and do that." So we did it. And then one of our students found out about the food bank on campus and, you know, wanted to start doing food drives for the food bank. And so we did some of that. We just kept training our students to find the needs and serve in them. And then about 8 years ago, party culture was building momentum on the campus. I was noticing that events were happening more out of the pub. The student union was starting to kind of grow these annual outdoor concerts. They were moving from like 1,000 to 2,000, 300, 3,000 students. And we know that in the midst of that party culture, there's an excessive use of alcohol, lots of first years, inexperienced, underage. In party culture, you hear the most about reports of sexual assault, issues of consent. And at that time, we had begun hearing that other campus ministries were starting to offer a harm reduction service through a program called Red Frogs. And so we went to the student union and we said, "Hey, we would love to do this. We would love to come in the midst of the parties and offer water and food. We could walk people home." And so we offered to set up our first hydration station. And they loved the idea, and they said, "Sure, you could come do it." We had no idea what we were doing. But we just committed to serving our butts off and doing whatever we could do to help. And I think that at that first event, we served maybe like 1,000 cups of water, you know, gave out hundreds of freezies and donuts, walked a couple dozen people home. By the end of that first week, they were kind of so impressed with our genuine desire just to safeguard in a non-judgmental fashion that they invited us back to all the rest of the parties that year. At that time, we were the first ones to offer kind of a harm reduction strategy. And this gained us a reputation on campus for a club that actually cares about their peers. And so this morning, I want to pass along just three ways that we have learned how to practice faithful presence in our mission field. I'm hoping these will be transferable principles for you to think about how you can be doing this in your own situations and in your own community. The first is this: a faithful presence involves being attentive. We have this saying in our Red Frogs group. We say that, we tell our students, when you're serving the hundreds, pay attention to the ones. Kind of comes out of Luke chapter 15, you know, when Jesus talked about leaving the 99 and going after the one. So every night when we'd get together and we'd pray before we'd serve, we would pray for our ones. We would say, God, who do you have for us tonight? Help us to pay attention to the ones. Remember one of our students, her name is Katie. She was helping a girl who had drank way too much. She'd preloaded before the party. There isn't even alcohol at these parties, but students would preload beforehand. And Katie, I remember her sitting with this girl as she kind of puked her guts out into a garbage can. She was holding her hair back. Afterwards, she walked her to dorm, got her safe. And then she asked, she did this, you know, thing. She said, hey, can I get your cell? Can we exchange numbers so I can check in on you tomorrow? Just want to make sure you're safe. And she did that. The next day, the girl's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. That was such a bad decision. Sometimes students make bad decisions. And a couple days later, the girl texts Katie, and she says, hey, strange question, but I have a question about laundry. What's the deal with, like, dark loads and white loads? And so she ends up talking to her, and they end up meeting up for coffee, and they end up having this, like, mentoring relationship during her first year at school. All because Katie was paying attention to her one. So faithful presence involves being attentive. But secondly, faithful presence involves being consistent. We see this instruction from Jesus in Luke 10 when he sends out the 72 disciples on mission. He gives them this instruction. He says, when you find a person of peace, stay there with them. Don't go about moving from house to house. Jesus taught that consistency is key in mission. Through us being available, consistently present, we earn the right to be heard. We can then afford the opportunity to create change. And we've seen this principle bear fruit in addressing the issue of party culture on campus. After about 3 years of us doing this, of consistently offering our hydration stations and serving the campus and doing this at all the major events, we started to see the needle move. And I remember I was invited into an administrative meeting, and it was titled a Substance Awareness Committee. Not substance abuse, just substance awareness. We just want to talk about the awareness of what's going on. Non-judgmental. And representatives from administration, wellness, security, residents were all there, all these big wigs, and then, like, local pastor. And I remember introducing myself and explaining about Red Frogs, and I don't shy away from letting them know. I tell them I'm a pastor, and Red Frogs is a program that we do on campus. And I remember this one guy leaning over to me and saying, oh, are you the party pastor guy? Later, I'm coming out of that meeting, and the head of security comes over to me, and he says, hey, I really appreciate the work you guys have been doing over these last couple years. I wanted to tell you that we've actually changed the event application form, that now when an event planner is planning an event, they have to have a harm reduction program in place, which essentially at that time meant must have Red Frogs. Our faithful and consistent presence affected change on the culture of the campus. So faithful presence involves consistency. But lastly, faithful presence involves being adaptive. And I probably don't even need to say that nowadays. This is what we're living in. The church, we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to be adaptive in the midst of what we're in. As John 3, verse 8 says, just like the wind blows wherever it pleases, so it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. We have to pay attention to where the Spirit is leading us. We have to pay attention to where the Spirit is going. And so, to be honest, like, clearly we haven't been doing this kind of Red Frogs harm reduction stuff for like over a year now. We've had to shift. We've had to adapt. In fact, to be honest, even a year before the pandemic hit, we were sensing the Spirit leading us elsewhere. Over the last couple of years, we actually saw the momentum of party culture decreasing on campus. Even the student union started canceling having these large events. There was just too much harm happening. So a couple years ago, we started partnering with the House Church, which I know you guys are familiar with. They helped us start a grocery run program on campus. And so every Tuesday night, students could sign up and get a ride to the grocery store. And then during this past year, we've been asking, well, what can we do? How can we still let students know that we're here and we want to care for them and bless them? So we started delivering care packages. Kind of the best way we could figure out how to interact with them. But what's interesting is the more that we did these care packages, the more we started to learn that food insecurity among students is an issue. I don't know if you've read the studies or seen news reports come out recently, but a study came out saying that 42% of UBCO students report being food insecure. And just to give you a contrast, they said 37 in Vancouver. The culture of Kelowna, the expensiveness of Kelowna is affecting students. And what does that mean? Well, it means that they have inadequate or insecure access to food due to financial constraints. So now we're starting to pay attention to that. We're watching where the Spirit is blowing. And we're saying, hey, maybe we need to adapt again. Maybe we can play a part in serving in that need. And so with our last care package delivery here in April, we were able to, again, with partnership with the House, they did a food drive for us to augment our care package. And we were able to just give food to students. So my intention this morning was to give you questions and prayers to pray, to give you some transferable principles. I hope that you as a community together can begin thinking through this, praying through this. So what will win the day? Where will hope come from for this lost and absent generation? How will our neighborhoods and our communities and our campuses be changed? Well, our hope is in the risen and ascended Jesus, the living God who is both the sent and sending God. Can I pray with you? Living God, the sent and sending God. God, we're humbled that you choose to use us in your mission. Jesus, you have called us to follow you, to be sent, a sent people. You've chosen ordinary, unremarkable, everyday disciples of Jesus who are willing to pray that prayer. To whom are you sending us, God? God, I pray for this community. Might they have a faithful presence in the lives of their neighbors, to those to whom you have called to bring hope and peace and forgiveness and mercy and reconciliation and justice, the kingdom of God on earth in heaven, because they've heard your command. Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. Amen. Amen.